Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, one and all, to Trisha's True Crime Radio, formerly known as Web Sleuths Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We have an amazing show, and I use the word amazing a lot, but this time I really mean it. But let's get the legal goo out of the way, okay? The opinions on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the host, moi, and the guests. Only. WebSleuths.com LLC is a completely different and separate corporate entity from Trisha's True Crime Radio, and it stands on its own. In other words, WebSleuths and Trisha's True Crime Radio are not connected other than I'm involved in both of them. In other words, what is on this radio show does not mean it can go on WebSleuths.com or on the other forum that I am so proud to own, and that is formsforjustice.org. Okay. Later in the show, we are going to talk about a group of people on WebSleuths.com who do the most amazing work. There's that word again, but it's true. The people from our unclaimed forum are the most incredible bunch. Rain1212 will join us to talk about how they go about helping the unclaimed actually go home. So we'll be talking to Rain later in the show. But first up, can police departments mess up? Would a police department intentionally withhold information or give out incomplete information just to cover their sloppy work? We don't like to think so, but the reality is it does happen. Look at the Drew Peterson case. In my opinion, he had help when he killed his wife, Kathleen Savio, from the police department he worked with and the Illinois State Police. They just blew off the investigation and proceeded to ignore the obvious while Kathleen's family was frantic for years trying to get them to see the obvious. But because they had the power, they just blew off the family. Now, that's just one high-profile case we know about, and I'm sure there are others. So our first case tonight, we're going to look at something that's very tragic and very strange. It's the death of Morgan Ingram. Was she killed by a mysterious stalker, like her family believes, or did she commit suicide, like the sheriff's department believes? Tonight, we are very privileged to have Morgan Ingram's mother, Toni, on Trisha's True Crime Radio. Toni, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Trisha.
Okay, before we get into the details about Morgan's case, what I would like you to do is tell us all about Morgan. Who was Morgan Ingram? What would you like us to know about your daughter? And please speak up just a little bit for me, okay?
Sure. And this is going to be the hardest part for me to get through this without crying, but
it's
Morgan
okay.
was what I would call, and I did call her this in the last year of her life, gifted, profound, and uniquely brilliant. She was extremely kind. She was very intuitive. She was happy, silly. We have videos of her. She was always playing around and cracking jokes on everybody. So she was very playful. She was a photographer, an awesome photographer. We have, thank God, we have thousands and thousands of her pictures on her computer that she took. So we do have a lot of pictures. She was an artist. She was a baker. She loved to bake goodies. And so she would bake goodies, not dinners, but goodies, you know, like pies and cookies and just fudge and things for her friends and her family. She taught herself how to play the piano. She taught herself how to crochet, knit. Her bedroom was full of yarn. It was a disaster. I liked to have everything organized. She didn't care. She taught herself how to learn. She taught herself how to learn Lithuanian, French. She loved animals. She used to have ferrets. They eventually died. They don't live all that long. But for years, she had ferrets. She had three ferrets, and they were just happy little things, just jumping all over the place, climbing into drawers, and cracking up. And she had them in bed with her. And when she did die, the time she died, her puppy, Wyla, she had just gotten her puppy, the day before we got home from vacation in August, and her stalking started right after she got her puppy, Wyla. And it was like her baby, like her child. Mm-hmm. And she had a cat named Mogwai. She had a horse named TC. We still have all her animals. She was a philosophy major. She's very, very deeply into philosophy. I'll tell you, I don't even understand it. She finished her AA degree at college, and she wanted to go to CU Boulder for her bachelor's and then on to law school. She never made it to do that. She actually, after the stalking started, she decided she wanted to stay home, and she wanted to just take ballet and take some other classes online. And then starting in January, she was going to start taking her certification for yoga and completing it in June so she could start the next fall semester at CU Boulder. Then she had two more years to take, and then she wanted to go into law school. She loved ballet. Ballet and yoga, I mean, they just kept her so busy and so strong. She was very muscular. And then I think, you know, she also loved children so much that what she did is in her spare time, which wasn't a lot, but she did babysitting to make money for one of the big babysitting firms in the valley here, because we have a lot of tourists with Aspen and skiers and things. So she started working for this company, and she loved working with these kids and babysitting. And then recently, before she died, a few of the weekends, she actually went away to Breckenridge and Frisco to babysit the military families while their parents were in a retreat. And she loved that. She loved taking the children that were problem children and taking them with her and making them happy and doing artwork with them and things like that. She loved making crafts, especially Martha Stewart crafts, which cracked me up. And when she was age 7, she tested out at college level writing. So she wrote journals.
Wait, stop. You said age 7?
7.
She tested at a college level writing. Wow.
Math, not so good, but writing, amazing.
I just want to make sure I heard you correctly.
It's true. It's really true. We did have her tested out. She was amazing. She wrote. She was very articulate. She wrote 3 novels, actually, which we've never had published, but she does have 3 novels on her computer. She wrote poems, wrote in journals constantly. She loved going places with Steve and myself. She was the youngest of 3 children, but the other 2 were older. One is 33, one's 30, and so she was kind of the baby of the family because she was 20 when she died. She turned 20 in August after the stalking started. We took her to concerts. We took her to James Blunt in Denver. She loved it twice. We took her to Jethro Tull at Red Rocks with her boyfriend at the time, and she loved Jethro Tull, which cracked me up because it's way before
her
time.
That's our era. That's our music.
She loved it. She got great seats, and she thought it was the best thing. And we took her to Mumford & Sons at Belly Up in Aspen, and we took her to all kinds of musicals. She loved stage plays and musicals. In fact, we set up a thing over at CMC at the college for a scholarship for the theater department for her, actually, in her name. And she loved going on road trips with us. Santa Fe was like her favorite because she loved seeing the architecture and all the art. We'd bring her to Las Vegas, California, Malibu Beach. She loved the ocean. And during the week, you know, just when she'd go to school and I would be working after work, she would run errands with me. She'd just jump in the car and she'd take her knitting and we would go to the post office and to the grocery store and do things together. And she wasn't a normal 19 to 20-year-old. I mean, I have an older daughter and son, and we used to take care of other teenagers years ago. So trust me, I know. And she definitely was not like a normal 19 or 20-year-old. She was way beyond her years. She was very sweet.
I was going to say, she sounds like an old soul, very compassionate.
She was. Since the moment she was born, people called her an old soul.
Yeah, she sounds like she was in tune to people and very loving, and I can see why you are so proud of her and what a tragedy this is. And again, I want to say how sorry I am that we have to have you on the show under these circumstances. But hopefully, Web Sleuths is a very kind and compassionate group of people, just like Morgan. And if anybody can help you get to the bottom of everything, it would be this group. But let's talk about the stalking. Okay, basically, tell us how it started, and then I want to ask you some questions about your local sheriff's department. When did you first notice Morgan was being stalked?
None of us really knew at first, I think. And this goes back to, I think, in February of 2011, the end of February. She borrowed my car. Her car had 300,000 miles on it, so it kind of died. And so she borrowed my car, and we shared it. And she took my car into a night class she had at the college over in Carbondale. Most of her classes were day classes, and they were in Glenwood. But she went to a night class, philosophy class that night, and it was started to snow. And when she came out, somebody had keyed her car, or my car, I guess you could say, from the very front of the car to the very back of the car, down to the metal. It was so deep. And then they wrote in gigantic letters on it, bitch, B-I-T-C-H. And when she came home with the car and showed me, I was so upset. I was so frantic. So we had to wait till the next morning and call the police, and I brought it down to the police station. And the police officer, the woman that was there, she was great, and she took pictures of it and wrote up the report. And she said, this looks like somebody that has really deep anger. And she said, I'm sure they made a mistake, and they, you know, maybe they were on drugs and they thought it was somebody else's car, and that's why they did it. And I told her, I mean, I just get a really creepy feeling from this. This does not sound right. So I told Morgan, and I said, Morgan, I think somebody that has a bad issue, a mental problem, did this. And she got very, very upset. And she said, just drop it, Mom. And I said, I really think it's somebody in Carbondale, because the people that you're hanging around, they know that you're going to a night class, so that they would know that they could go right over there and do that to the car. And she was very upset with me, and she wanted me to drop it. So now, fade in, fade out, nothing happened again after that. That was just something that happened at the end of February that I think we've tied into this now.
Right.
And then she left on spring break to go to California to work on a movie with her sister. Her sister's a costume designer in California, and she was just an assistant to make some money and help her sister. So she was gone. And then she came back, finished off school, got her AA, and then summer started, and she went back to California because her godparents in Kauai sent her round-trip tickets to come visit them, and using their miles. So she went to Kauai for 2 weeks. She had been to Kauai when she was a baby for their wedding, but she didn't remember it because she was, I'm not a baby, she was 3 years old, but she just didn't remember. So she had a great, great time with her godparents and took lots of pictures, came back, and then worked for her sister on another movie that was being shot in Los Angeles. So she was there until, I guess, sometime in July. She came home for about a week in July, and then we left to go to California on vacation, and Steve had a doctor's appointment. So I think, when did we leave? We got home August 1st, so we were gone for that whole week before that.
Okay.
So we never really noticed anything, I guess you could say. She wasn't around a lot, but we never really noticed much of anything going on. And then 2 days after we got back, and she was walking her puppy back and forth from the river down past our house, and she was just having a great time showing her puppy to all her friends from Aspen to Carbondale. And then towards the end of the week, actually 2 days into after she got home, she started telling me she was hearing tapping on her windows at night when she'd come home, take off her clothes, take a shower, and it was bothering her, and she didn't know what it was. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, it's got to be like something, a bird or a branches or something. You know, we really didn't think about it. And then finally that Friday night, a couple of days later, it was bad. I mean, she could tell that within 10, 15 minutes of coming home, somebody was tapping and kind of banging on her windows. So it was scaring her. So Saturday morning we got up very early, and all three of us walked outside and checked her windows out, and there were no, I mean, there's no branches that could be by the window, nothing. I mean, she had two-bedroom windows and a bathroom window. And
let me stop you right here. Did you hear this tapping at the same time that she did?
Not at that time. No,
okay.
Not at that time. I did later on, but not at that time. I did not.
Okay. I'm sorry. Please continue.
So then that weekend, it got worse. And then finally that Monday, I guess it was Monday the 8th, she was so nervous. She went to take a shower in my bathroom, which is on the other side of the house, my office bathroom. And I didn't know she was doing that when she got home. She just came in, got her clothes and went in, her jammies, and went in there. And my window was open like 2 inches. It was frosted glass, but it was open 2 inches. So she went in the bathroom, took off her clothes, and then she freaked out. She just got a really creepy feeling. So she closed the window real quick with the crank thing, and somebody just banged so loud on that window. She just screamed and just grabbed a towel and ran out with no clothes on, you know, with the towel wrapped around her, and ran into my room on the other end of the house and told me what happened. So then, of course, I called the sheriffs, and they came out, and they actually saw footprints. This was really creepy because they showed me where there were footprints underneath the window of the bathroom, my office bathroom, but then they went and looked all the way around the house, and they found footprints, like, with the toes right up against the wall by her bedroom windows. And it was very creepy. And so then they called up, and the patrol officer was really nice. He called up the office and asked if he could take a casting or a picture. And they said, no, this is just misdemeanor trespassing right now. You're not allowed to do that.
Oh, brother.
So my husband went out and just took pictures of them.
Well, good.
They couldn't
good.
Do it. Yeah. So that's how it started.
Okay, so now it just kind of came out of nowhere and started. When did you start to hear the things that Morgan was hearing? When did you start to notice this stalker in your lives?
Well, this is, we're still in August at this point. And
it's August 2011?
I mean, she started sleeping in our bedroom closet in the master bedroom.
We're talking
bedroom.
About 2011, right?
Right, 2011.
Okay.
So she's sleeping in my closet because she's such a nervous wreck. So her and the puppy, her cell phone, everything's in my closet. It was
right.
a disaster. But she had to. And so she's sleeping in there. We're sleeping in our bed in the room. And at this point in time now, we have motion detector lights and motion detector alarms around the house. So now motion detector alarms are going off. Motion detector lights are going off. It's warm out because it's summertime. So we have our windows open at night by our bed. Not in the bath, in the closet where she is, but in our bedroom. And the windows are open, and, of course, we're talking, and I have a loud voice. So I think the person could hear what I was saying all the time, so he knew where we were at all times. And the lights outside of our bedroom windows, the motion lights, would go off, and then we would run out and try to catch the person, and we could never see anything in the dark. So we didn't hear noises at that time, but we could... the lights and the alarms were going off. And then Morgan finally started saying that she was starting to get things thrown up against the window, because the window in the master bedroom walk-in closet was really high up at the ceiling, maybe 10 feet high.
Right.
And so she was getting rocks thrown on that window. So that was kind of a little nerve-wracking. So I would
I want to stop. Tony, I want to stop for just a moment. How would the stalker know that she was in the closet?
Well, that's what I wondered, and Steve said it was totally obvious because we had our windows open, and I kept saying, Morgan, are you okay in the closet?
Okay.
How's it going? Are you ready to go to sleep? You know, I was just talking to her through the wall, and
okay.
Steve said that was so stupid.
Got it. Okay, I'm sorry. Please continue.
So that happened, and then towards the end of August, when we had this thing where Morgan always had to come home. I was trying to get her to come home always before 10 o'clock and always text me ahead of time so I could meet her in the driveway with pepper spray and, you know, and I could be right there so she was safe getting in and out with her puppy. So one night, it was pretty consistent. She'd come home around 10 o'clock because she'd wait till the last
mm-hmm.
minute. And then one night I was in the front room, which was my office, and my window was open because it was warm and she wasn't home. And I had the light on in my office, and the curtains were open just, you know, a little bit, not a lot.
Right.
And I wasn't thinking about it, and I was on the phone with her. She called, and she said, Mom, can I sleep over at my friend's house tonight because I really need some rest, and I don't want to sleep in the closet. And
mm-hmm.
I said, sure, you don't have to come home tonight. And I said, I'll see you in the morning. Just make sure you get home early for school and everything because school had started. And as soon as I hung up that phone, something, I don't even know what it was, hit my window, and it was so loud, it was like a gunshot. And I was so scared, I just jumped out of my skin. And then right then and there, I realized this is how she feels. This is like the scariest thing in the world. And I got angry because I'm Italian, of course. So I just, you know, grab my pepper spray. I'm in pajamas with my cow's coat, and I go running out in the front yard, and I'm like cussing and screaming
mm-hmm.
and going, okay, come out, you chicken. But
you can say it here. We don't have any FCC rules, so say whatever you'd like, my dear, okay?
But anyway, so of course he didn't come out. So then I ran in the room, and I got Steve, and I kind of demasculated him, saying, you get out there and you get this guy.
Oh, poor guy. My gosh.
I know, poor thing. I know everybody tells me I'm so mean. And so, you know, he was trying to calm me down. He told me to call the police. So I called the sheriffs, and they said that they were on their way, and they said, promise me, Tony, you will not leave the house. We're going to try to come in with a dog.
Mm-hmm.
I said, great. I promise I won't leave the house. Well, 5 seconds after I got the phone, I told Steve, I'm going out there. I've had it. I'm going to catch this guy.
Oh, dear.
And Steve, I was so angry. I was really angry. He
mm-hmm.
said, you promised them not to go out. I said, I'm going out. And he goes, no, you stay here. I'll go out. So he grabs the pepper spray and he walks out. And he almost pepper sprays the sheriff. It was horrible. But they came in. This is the closest they ever came to catching this guy. They came in with 4 sheriffs, 4 different directions, and they came in fast, really, really fast. No dog, but the sheriffs came in. And they tromped right over to that house 3 houses down that they were thinking at this point in time, after coming so many times, that this is where it was coming from. And so they surrounded the house. Knocked on the door, and for the longest time, and I stayed in the house, I wasn't allowed out, and my next-door neighbor was out, and she was listening, and calling me on the cell phone. And finally, the B person came to the door, and she said that the K person was sleeping, even though it was just after 10. It was between 10 and 10:30 at night.
Okay,
she was
well, hold on.
She wasn't going to allow anybody in.
Me person and K person. Are you saying
right.
that you, those obviously are initials, are you saying you know this, you know who the stalker is, or you feel you know who the stalker is?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
That's
feel.
Fine. So
but
I just want to make sure.
We're not 100% sure.
Let me stop you real quickly. Let me stop you real quickly, Tony, and let everybody
sure.
know. We're talking with Tony Ingram, whose daughter, Morgan, was found dead in her bedroom in December 2011. The Ingrams believe it was a stalker who killed her, and the sheriff's department and the officials say, no, we think it was suicide. So you're listening to Tony, and it's a very emotional and very stressful story. I'm getting stressed out just listening to this.
And
so,
you haven't even heard all the things that happened.
Oh, I can't even. I'm a nervous wreck. Okay,
well,
so.
Well, the blog, the reason I did the blog, just so that everyone knows too, I did the blog, someone had suggested I do that, just to tell her people the story of every things that happened, the truth that happened every single day during her stalking, so that they could see it was real. They could see what happened, and they could also use it as a guideline to realize that, you know, we, throughout this whole thing, there were times where for 3 days maybe it was quiet, and we were thinking in our minds, oh, it's over. Maybe we were imagining things. Maybe it wasn't as bad as we thought. Maybe this was just a game. I mean, we came up with so many lies to ourselves in our brains trying to justify why we didn't have to live like this anymore, you know, and that our daughter wasn't in danger anymore because it was just so horrifying. It was just horrible. And
so
it just wasn't working. I mean, it just continued.
Tony, we're talking, let me take you back to that night when the sheriff came and almost caught him. B came to the door and said K was asleep. We are thinking K is the stalker. And
we're thinking he's stuck out of the house at this point.
He's stuck out of the house. So what happened from there?
They stuck around for a long time. I'm thinking it was almost an hour. It was pretty shocking. I mean, they just kept putting their flashlights through the windows. They were just surrounding the house. They were just making sure, because they thought they caught him outside, too, and I'm pretty sure they did. So she refused. She just absolutely refused. She wouldn't let the sheriff in. She wouldn't go get the person. She wouldn't do anything. And so finally, they had to leave. So they left, and within 5 minutes of them leaving, our back motion detector lights and alarms went off 7 times in a row. I mean, this person was just like running back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And we could never see him. I mean, that's how fast he was. It was just crazy. And Morgan wasn't even home. So this was all happening with Morgan not even being home.
Mm-hmm. So,
and then,
go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say, and then it went on, and, you know, we bought a webcam camera, you know, for wildlife web camera for hunters because someone suggested it. We mounted it, and the first night that we mounted it, you know, Morgan had the rocks, and we called the sheriffs, and they came, and they searched, couldn't find anything. They never can. I mean, you cannot catch a stalker like this if you show up after it's happened. It's just you're not going to catch them. That's the wrong way to do it. And so they, 3 officers came. They were so nice. They were great. They searched the area, couldn't find them. They left. After they left, we went back to bed, and Steve was ready to go to sleep. And I said, oh, wait a minute. We have to get the camera down and check out the pictures because we don't know how it works, if it's going to work or not work. So he got the ladder. We climbed up, got the web camera down, and plugged it into the computer. And we're looking, and one officer leaves, then the second 2 officers leave at the same time. And you could see their cars driving away. And, boom, there's the stalker right there, right by the front porch on the camera, leaning up against Steve's truck. And then the next picture after that, and they're all time-stamped and date-stamped and everything, you can see, you know, a blur of spinning, and what he had done is he had whacked the camera with something. I don't even know what, because it was up high. He couldn't get it down, obviously, and the camera never worked well after that, so we didn't really we just hung it, but we didn't really get any pictures off of it after that. So we
questions.
Ended up going to
oh, I'm
video
sorry, go ahead.
Cameras.
Video cameras.
So then
okay.
we ended up going to the video surveillance cameras, like 6 of them surrounding the house that go 24/7 and they record.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like they have at stores. So we bought that eventually.
And did that
and
come up with anything?
We did get pictures on that too.
that you did get picked. You could never see his face, obviously.
Never could see his face. I mean, you can't kind of, and I'm sure if somebody could enhance it, they could probably see things. I mean, I could see his shirt. I could see his hair. I could see him the way he's walking, hand in pocket, some pictures. I mean, just popping up from behind Morgan's car in the driveway from a crouching position to a standing position and running on, behind a bush. I mean, we did have pictures, or in the back of the house where the tree was that we believed he climbed up the tree and got on our roof. You could see.
I want to interrupt you really quickly. Are these images on your blog? Because if they are, Web Sleuth members can capture them and enhance them.
They're not, only because I've been doing it on a daily thing, so these pictures aren't on the – it hasn't been posted yet. But, I mean, you know, I do want this solved, and if I have to start posting things faster and faster instead of doing them the way I've been doing them, that's fine too.
Well, it's totally up to you, but let me tell you, the people on Web Sleuth are amazing what they can do technically. And if you put those up there, they'll take them and they'll enhance them as best as anyone can. We're talking with Tony Morgan. Tony is telling us the very tragic and very scary story of a stalker stalking their family. And Tony's beloved daughter, Morgan, was found, Tony Ingram. Sorry, I'm so like wound up about this. No, don't apologize. It's just so frightening.
Strange, I know. It's
yes,
scary.
Tony Ingram, her daughter Morgan, was found dead. Officials say it was a suicide. Tony's family feels that it was the stalker. Did you ever think to stake out the alleged stalker's house and wait for him to come out?
We did. Steve actually borrowed a, what would you call it, thermal imaging scope.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And actually went out on the berm and tried to wait for this person. But we believe he had night vision glasses, too, and he could see anything going on because we had seen a little tiny red light moving away at times when we ran outside to try to find this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have said, okay, well, it could have been a scope on a gun. It could have been night vision goggles. It could have been all kinds. I've had people say everything. I think it was night vision glasses or goggles or something.
Yeah, it very well
could have
been.
Yeah, I mean, I had the sheriffs do a stakeout one night for about 3 hours, and, you know, that's kind of silly, too, because you've got sheriff that's reflected on the back of your shirt. And anybody can see that. I can see that, and I'm blind. So
exactly.
That was never going to work.
Let me take you back just a little bit, okay? And I want to clear up who we're talking to, because the last time I tried to say it, I got it all discombobulated. We're talking with Tony Ingram. Her daughter, Morgan, was found dead in December. Tony's family believes it was a stalker. Officials are saying, no, it was a suicide, and Tony is explaining what happened leading up to her daughter Morgan's death. And it's very intense, it's very dramatic, and very scary. So this person lives a few houses down from you. Do you have any idea why you think this person would have done this? What is the motivation here?
Well, this is tough because I don't know for a fact this is the person, but I mean we had many suspects.
If it is the person,
if it is
why?
The person, he moved in while we were gone on vacation. He rented a room from his girlfriend's father, so he was living with his girlfriend and her father.
Mm-hmm.
She was under 18, and he moved in just before we, you know, got back from vacation. And the stalking started. He moved out the beginning of October. He supposedly broke up with her and moved out. The stalking continued. But then I knew that he worked 5 to 10 minutes away at the night shift at the grocery store. So we knew that he was able to get there anyway. It didn't matter whether he was living in that house or not. It was just, you know, it was kind of, I think it was a scam. And I think this girl, Morgan was never friends with her. She just didn't like her. She tried at one point. She came to our house once, and Morgan dyed her hair for her just to try to be nice. And then she told me after she left, she said, Mom, I cannot be with this person. I just do not get along with her at all. And she couldn't. She was younger than Morgan. She was in and out of rehab, and she was just not the kind of person that Morgan wanted to be
relate
around,
to and
so.
Hang out with. Yeah, there are people like that, obviously, in the world. Okay, so now we have the girlfriend is living there. Morgan knows her. The guys moved out. Why did he hyper-focus on Morgan?
That's what we're trying to figure out. Morgan ran into him just before the car got keyed in February, and that was at a friend's mother's house. She walked in with some friends, and this girl was standing there with this guy. Morgan had never seen this guy before, ever, and she just got a really creepy feeling from him. And the girl said, oh, Morgan, we have to hang out sometime. And Morgan didn't even answer her. She just turned around and walked out as fast as she could. And she told me about it when she got home. And then her car got keyed after that. And then I had friends that were in the house at the time and heard this girl say bad things about Morgan and how she was going to get her. And this girl had already beaten up another girl and gotten arrested for it. It was underage, obviously, but within the last year before that. So she had some anger issues, and so Morgan didn't want to even go near her. And recently this girl just got arrested again right after she just had a baby. She got arrested for beating somebody up again.
Of course.
Domestic violence. So.
Well, and so, you know, when you're dealing with somebody like this woman who obviously has some deep issues, if she feels rejected or humiliated, that could be enough for her to get somebody, I'm just theorizing here, to get somebody to torment her because, hey, we're not good enough for Morgan. You know, how dare she diss us like this? I mean, you can see that type of mentality if that is the case. You know, and the other thing, too, Tony, a stalker doesn't need to have a logical reason whatsoever. First of all, it's not logical to do anyway, but they don't need to have a reason. It could be he saw her one day and thought that she was communicating with him through her eyes. I mean, it could be something just crazy like that. I've heard John Douglas, the FBI profiler, speak about this. He even warned his daughters not to smile at strangers in public because he worked a lot of cases where simply smiling at a stranger turned into a stalking case. And that's the one of the many terrifying things about stalking is it is so can be so absolutely random. So all of this is going on, and we'll get back a little bit more to the other things that he did and the police and what they believe. But I want to ask you some tough questions, okay?
Sure.
Because, and I'm not saying this out of disrespect in any way, shape, or form, but as Morgan's case gets more media attention, you're going to have naysayers and people come in that are going to try and prove you wrong simply based on the fact that the authorities believe she committed suicide, okay?
Right.
And they're going to say they couldn't catch this guy, you know, was he really there? Could Morgan have keyed the car herself? On and on and on.
Right.
First question, did Morgan suffer from depression? If so, how deep was the depression?
She was never diagnosed with depression. She never even had it. She was never treated for it. She was like the furthest from a depressed person ever I've ever met in my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I also want to tell you that I know the stress of the stalking for 4 months took its toll on me. I've never been depressed either, but I went to see a therapist 2 weeks before she died because I was a nervous wreck. Mm-hmm. And I asked Morgan to go with me because I figured she was a nervous wreck. And she said, I don't need a therapist. I'm fine. I have ballet. I work it out. I sweat. I talk to people. I'm fine. So she wouldn't go with me. So I asked one of the detectives. There was two felony stalking detectives on her case. So 2 weeks before, when I was going to the therapist, I asked the female detective if she could please have a talk with Morgan and make sure she was okay, because it had to be taking its toll. I could see it in her face, you know.
Right.
And you're not getting any sleep. You're getting woken up at 2 in the morning with a big bang on your window. I mean, she walked outside to let her puppy go potty. She got a creepy feeling and put the puppy on a long leash, opened the door, and the guy was standing right there dressed in black. I mean, he followed her in the car. I mean, I knew she was stressed to the max. So this woman, the detective, talked to her for over an hour and then reported back to me, this is 2 weeks before she died, that she is not depressed at all. She's fine. She really feels upbeat. You know, she works it out. I'm a runner, and I run every morning, and I blow steam off, and she does the same thing with ballet twice a day. And she said, you have nothing to worry about. And then 36 hours before she died, I went with her to our gynecologist in Grand Junction because we both have the same gynecologist, so mm-hmm. we just drive together. And I went in there first and talked to our gynecologist, Dr. Sims, and I told her about the stocking and that Morgan, you know, has dark circles in her eyes now. She's exhausted. What am I going to do? Could you please talk to her? So she did Morgan's examination and talked to her, and of course it's doctor-client privilege. I can't,
right.
You know, I couldn't ask her what happened. And then a month after Morgan died, I decided I was coming out of my shock a little bit, and I called the doctor and I talked to her, and she was in shock that Morgan died. And mm-hmm. she said when she did her exam, she was perfectly normal and healthy and in good shape, and she did have a long talk with Morgan. And she said Morgan was fine. She said she was tired, exhausted, and a little stressed out. But other than that, she was pretty upbeat, thinking they were going to arrest this guy the following week because they had an appointment the following week to go over his hours and try to, you know, I don't know what you call it, but try to get him see something that they could say this is definitely evidence.
A pattern.
So Morgan was upbeat with that doctor. And this was mm-hmm. 36 hours before she died.
Okay.
And the doctor asked her, do you want some sleeping pills because I can prescribe some for you since you're not sleeping? And she said no. She didn't like to take pills because she didn't. She had not taken amitriptyline for over a year and a half. We even got the printouts from the pharmacy, from her doctors. She didn't. She didn't like to take pills. She went through the hyperbaric chamber 7 times to get rid of the carbon monoxide that she had been exposed to. And she mm-hmm. was very healthy after that. She had no more pain attacks.
Okay, so the question of depression is pretty much answered in your mind and in everybody's mind that knew her, including her doctor, that she
right.
was upbeat and she was actually kind of looking forward to the coming events because she felt like she was getting closer and closer to this guy, getting
right.
him caught, him be
well, I
at least
the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we're talking with Toni Ingram. Toni's daughter Morgan was stalked. Unfortunately and very tragically, Morgan was found dead in December of 2011. Officials ruled it a suicide. Toni and her family are absolutely convinced that the stalker did this to her, a mysterious stalker. They have an idea who they think it might be. They're not sure, but they're having trouble getting the attention they feel this case needs to get this man for the murder of their daughter. Would you be willing to take a lie detector test? If authorities say, okay.
Oh,
and,
sure.
Okay, that's no problem. So authorities, if they say, look, you know, we think you're making it up, I would suggest you say, give me a lie detector test right now.
Oh, I would absolutely do that okay. in any case, and so would my husband.
Okay, now.
And, I mean.
Go ahead, please.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that and the night she was murdered, her jewelry just disappeared, and within 2 weeks of her being murdered, this guy was arrested on a warrant in Glenwood, so it wasn't in the county, so it wasn't our sheriff's, and he was arrested for taking stolen jewelry and selling it from somebody else. And
mm-hmm.
he, when they cuffed him and they searched his car, they found a lot of drugs and a scale and paraphernalia, and so he got it for felony stalking too, but I think his charges were reduced. So I'm not sure, but at that point when I found out, I did not find out from our sheriffs, I found out from my daughter-in-law who saw it in the newspaper. So I went down myself, since our sheriffs didn't even know, to the police department in Glenwood, and I asked them for the public record of the arrest. They couldn't find it. So then I went over to the DA's office, and they couldn't find it. So then they asked me to fill out this paperwork, which was all this private information, which I did, and I gave it to them, and they said that an investigator would call me. They called me, and I told them the case of my daughter and that her jewelry disappeared, and I wanted to know if it was in with this person's jewelry that, you know, he had sold
yeah.
to the Cash for Gold place. And they were very angry at me for even trying to get involved, and they told me they
what?
Weren't going to say anything, and I had to go through my sheriff. So I called the sheriff, and he said that he would try to find out for me, which he ended up telling me if I had pictures of the jewelry, then he could do something, but any other way would be a bad policing. And, you know, he couldn't do it. They just couldn't do it.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry. I've never heard of that. Do you have to have pictures of your jewelry? I thought you could identify it and have other people.
I did tell him exactly what they look like.
Uh-huh.
But,
and so you don't know. To this day, you don't know.
I still don't know. No.
And that's obscene. I'm sorry. That's just ridiculous. Such
oh,
an
that's
easy
just
thing
one of
to
the
do.
Obscene things.
Oh, I can't. I'm sitting here getting mad. I'm spitting all over my computer here. I can't even imagine what you're doing. Okay,
it's almost like this stalker. I believe this stalker, honestly, I believe the person that did this to Morgan is actually a serial stalker and a serial murderer. And I think that they haven't warned anybody. I think the summer before I had two patrol officers who I thought were great. They were like warriors. They actually, two separate ones, it's two separate times in the beginning of this whole thing, told me about a story that the subdivision across the road from us the summer before had five separate incident calls, I guess they call them.
Oh, my gosh.
Where they called, people called in, women called in and said somebody was tapping on their windows and, you know, spying on them. So in the last one, they said the woman heard a trash can fall over, so she went out there and saw a guy in a hoodie dressed in black, and so she called 911. She was hysterical, and they had a dog in the area, so the dog hit the trail and followed the guy for 2 miles and then lost him. There's a lot of irrigation ditches, and there's a river right there where they lost him, so he probably went through the water. But they lost him, and then they never had any more calls, they said, after that. Well, just a week ago, through our tip line on our website, a woman came in and sent me an email and said that I live in that subdivision on that street. And 2 weeks before Morgan's stalking, that last summer, she said, my husband left town for 12 months. I mean, he had not been gone for 12 months. This is the first night he was gone in 12 months. Mm-hmm. So she has no idea how the guy knew he was gone. But she was upstairs, second story, with her two little babies, and she got a creepy feeling and looked out her window, and right in the middle of her backyard, which was fenced, was a guy dressed in black looking up at her window. So she got the mama bear syndrome going, you know, and she ran downstairs and she grabbed her old German Shepherd and pulled him down the stairs, grabbed a butcher knife, and she said she ran to her back door, opened it, and told the dog to attack. The dog had never been told to attack in its whole life, but the dog saw the guy, raised its hackles, and just took off barking. And
good
after
for
the
him.
Guy almost got him, and the guy went over the fence.
Our people, our listeners in our chat room, Tony, are asking a question. They would like to know the year and the kind of car so they can kind of maybe figure out the height of this guy. Okay, so if you could get that information to us, they might be able to figure out.
He bought the car right after the stalking started.
Mm-hmm. If you
and I know exactly the make and the picture and everything of the car.
Okay, if you could
the patrol office. I mean, not the patrol office. When it became a felony stalking case, they actually made up posters. They said and gave them to all the law enforcement people so they could see the car, his name, where we lived, Morgan's name, her car, you know, everything, so that they would know to be aware.
Got it. Okay, so if you could get that to us. We don't even need to do it on the forum. If you would rather not, we could just give it to some members and they could kind of work it out. And that way they could give you an idea if the height is the same as the person who you think it is. That's just another clue pointing to this stalker. So if you could get that to me,
sure.
I would really appreciate it.
Yeah, I can definitely get that to you, but not over the phone.
No. Oh, no. We will do this off the air later via email, however you want to handle it. So we're talking with Tony Ingram. Tony's daughter, Morgan, was stalked by a very scary, mysterious stalker who has yet to be caught. Morgan was found dead in her bedroom in December of 2011. Officials say it was a suicide. Tony and the rest of her family feel strongly, without question, that it was the stalker who did this to their lovely daughter, Morgan. Okay, onward with the tough questions, because these are the questions, Tony, that people are going to ask you. Okay.
Which is great. This is great.
Okay.
Can I say one thing, though, about
yes,
this?
Yes, please.
You keep saying the suicide. I just want everybody to be really clear that the pathologist, the forensic pathologist, Dr. Kurtzman, who did the original autopsy the morning she died and did the PER on her, he wrote down natural causes. And we, after a month of coming out of my bubble of grief and then seeing the autopsy report for the first time and going through it with him on a conference call with my husband and the lead detective, I asked him the hard question, how could you put down natural causes when she has such a high level of amitriptyline? And he said, well, she was taking it because your husband showed me a bottle with a prescription. And I said, that was from over a year and a half ago. She was not taking it. And he said, well, parents are the last to know. So we argued with him for months and months. We threw every specialist at him. All her doctors didn't agree with him. I mean, everything, and he would not change it. And that's when I got Dr. Doberson involved in this.
Oh, so Dr. Doberson is involved. He's a very good doctor. He worked
great
on the JonBenet Ramsey case. He's
right,
a magnificent man.
He just finished
man
up the Batman shootings in the movie theater.
Right. So what are you saying? Because I was just reading. I can't remember the name of the sheriff's department official where they said it was a suicide. Did they change
right
it to indeterminate or undetermined, or what did they change it to?
Nope.
Nothing.
They changed it from natural to suicide. And we knew they were going to do it just because they knew about Dr. Doberson, and they refused to change it from natural causes. So I had been threatened 3 times over the phone by the pathologist, Dr. Kurtzman, that every time I brought up the subject of it has to be the amitriptyline, nothing else showed up, no alcohol, no drugs, no nothing, and she wasn't taking it. Every time I said that, he said, Tony, I could put down suicide or accidental overdose, except there's nothing in her stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So every time he cut me off with that statement, every single time. So I knew it was coming eventually. And so
yeah,
when
it was kind
I told
of a
them
threat
I got Dr. Doberson, pardon?
Right. It was a threat. It was like, look, lady, I could do this if you don't watch
exactly
it, right? Okay.
Exactly. But I don't back off that easily because I knew, you know, her doctors knew, everyone was very upset and very angry. And so I got Dr. Doberson involved, and he said in the beginning, oh, Trey Holt, I know him, the coroner, just have him call me. I'll explain to him that the pathologist is wrong and why he's wrong, because I sent him all the lab tests and the whole thing. So our coroner would never call him. He would never call me. He never once ever contacted us. We sent certified letters, everything, nothing. And then on August 31st, Morgan died December 2nd, 2011. August 31st, 2012 was the first time we got a fax with the new PER, changing it to suicide, and then with the new laboratory results.
Okay, and we're going to get into all of that, the laboratory and what was found in her system and how you think she was killed and how he was able to do this, the stalker, in just a little bit. But I want to ask a couple more of these tough questions.
Sure.
I know what some of our members are thinking, and only because you have to understand, we deal with all kinds of strange situations all the time, Tony. And so we've kind of seen, we're certainly not anything like law enforcement. We haven't, you know, seen what they have seen, but we're, I don't want to say we're jaded, but we approach things cautiously. And I have a feeling that somebody might ask you if you're doing this for attention, Munchausen by proxy. Is
right
there, what would you say to somebody that would accuse you of that?
I would say that the sheriff's department and the forensic pathologist and coroner made big mistakes, and they covered them up. Incompetence is one thing, but not admitting mistakes and continuing to cover them up is beyond wrong. As Dr. Doberson says, this could have easily been corrected in the beginning, and perhaps their arrogance would not allow this to happen. They forgot the very first rule of digging holes. When you find yourself in a hole, you stop digging. These guys did not stop. And you know what? It's my daughter, and she would have done the same thing for me. I would not ever, I don't care whose daughter it was, I would fight for this. This is wrong. I think it's happened before, and I think it has to be stopped.
Okay, thank you very much. I spoke with Dr. Cyril Weck. He's a very famous forensic pathologist. He actually helped me years ago with a member of one of my forums who came to me because her daughter was murdered, she felt, absolutely certain. And Dr. Weck looked at it and came back and said, no, it was a suicide. And he told me, he said, that's one of the hardest parts of his job, and I'm paraphrasing here, that parents just do not want to believe that their child could ever, ever do this, no matter what. And he has seen suicides by ballpoint pen. He's seen suicides that have been, you know, just covered up to where it was almost impossible to tell. Isn't it possible that she was more depressed than you thought? That maybe the stalking just got to her and she couldn't take it anymore?
You would think that, but you know what? One of our really close friends, whose daughter was her best friend from when she was 12 years old on, he's a former OSI. So when they went out, when the government sent them on an airplane to go to a different country to solve something, they had to solve it. That's just the way it goes. It wasn't like you could just say, oh, well, I don't know who this was, and drop the whole case. They didn't do that. They had to solve every case. And he said he came over, spent 24 hours at our house, and talked to the lead detective after Morgan died. And he said, Tony, this is going to be really hard. I know Morgan's not a suicide. But, and this is before they changed it to a suicide. He goes, but when you're looking at something like this, you have to look at all the aspects. He goes, here's the paperwork. We're going to go through all these questions. He asks us all the questions that you're supposed to ask on a suicide, which we were never asked by our investigators ever. And he went through the whole thing with us. And he looked at us and he said, she didn't commit suicide, period. And we were told that by our people, but I don't trust our people. But him, I do trust.
Right.
So, and Dr. Doberson, I do trust. And he said the same thing. I mean, there's just no evidence that she committed suicide. She was not a suicide candidate.
Tony, Dr. Doberson, having Dr. Doberson on your side is really going to help you a lot. And I'm very glad to hear that
he is such a nice person.
He is a wonderful man. We're talking with Tony Ingram, whose daughter Morgan was stalked, unfortunately, and very tragically. Morgan was found dead in her bedroom. At first, they ruled it natural causes. Then they changed it to a suicide. But the Ingrams are absolutely convinced that the stalker, the person who was terrorizing Morgan and Tony and the entire family for quite a while, is the one responsible for Morgan's death. Let's move on. There's one other question I want to ask you.
Sure.
Why were you not as concerned about Morgan away from home? Did you not think that this guy would follow her and try and harm her?
Oh, I did.
Did you? Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. She always had pepper spray on her. She was. I told her over and over again, don't ever be without people. If you drive up, you text your friends, they come out, they meet you at the car, they walk you in. You know, she was told to always, always watch out. And I was a nervous wreck. And my husband actually quite a few times drove at night into Carbondale and parked kind of where she was or she'd be coming by, and he'd just wait. And then she would come by because she'd text me and tell me every single time she was coming home, she would be on her way, and I'd text him, and he would just hold back and wait to see if somebody was following her because she got followed twice, and she was so scared. I mean, she was smart enough to maneuver this down this street, that street, all these side streets, keep winding around, and the car kept following her. And finally she pulled into the college parking lot where there were kids getting out of their cars, and she pulled right into the middle. And then they drove by, and then she took off out the other entrance and then went to the highway and took the highway and then came back all the way around again. So she completely lost them. But it was nerve-wracking. My husband sat in a bush one night off of County Road 100 and waited for her to come home to see if there was somebody on foot that, you know, would know that was tipped off that she was coming home, and they were on foot getting there, and he never saw anybody. We tried so many things.
Oh, boy. You know, it's Mark Klass has said this to me, and I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Klass. His daughter Polly was kidnapped and murdered.
Right, I am.
Yeah, he's a very good friend of websleuths.com, and he told me, he says, you know, if someone wants to get you, they'll get you. I mean, and that's kind of a fatalistic view, but here's proof. You know, I mean, this guy really knew how to dodge and how to make sure that he wasn't seen. So we're going to get into the actual death of Morgan and how you think she was killed. But first, I want to ask you about this, and I'm a little confused on this. You think the stalker could hear you talk because they hacked into your phone calls? What am I missing here? What's the story behind that?
Well, at first in the beginning, my husband thought he could hear us because it was hot out. We didn't have the air conditioning on, and I had windows cracked. So I speak loudly, and I, you know, yell across the house. So he thinks that he was listening to that. Now, so many people have said that Morgan's phone could have had something done to it. It was not jailbreak. I guess it's called jailbreaked.
Right,
I'm not sure how you pronounce that. But it was not. It was my husband's iPhone. Her phone had died, and my husband just gave her his old iPhone when he got a new one. So that's what it was that she had most of the time. Now, she did leave it at a friend's house. You know, she went to see some friends, and they were all hanging out at this house, and she did leave it by accident overnight one night. So somebody could have gotten to it. I'm not saying that they couldn't have, but it only happened once. And we checked the phone, and we didn't see. I mean, I checked the phone records, and we checked for apps on the phone. We didn't see anything, but we're not professionals. We don't know what we're looking for.
Well, and neither am I. Let me just state that now. But let me tell you, you'd have to be really, really smart to figure out how to, and I don't even know if the technology exists, to be able to hack into a phone and listen to phone conversations. Now, I know you can do that with voicemail, but I don't even know if that technology exists. I could be wrong. Now, was her phone ever forensically looked at by anybody, and do you still have it? Do you
still
have the
have
phone?
It.
Okay, that's one thing that maybe you want to look into, because I think it's not that I'm not trying to tell you what to do, but it might
be
a good idea.
No, that's on my list of things to do. I just haven't found somebody to do it yet.
Absolutely. One of the questions from our members, what was Morgan doing the day she died, and who was she with? Who had access to her? Who came to visit that day? Let's go to that day. What started the day before she died? What was she doing?
Okay, I found her body at 5:30 in the morning on Friday. So on Thursday morning, she woke up in the morning and did not go to school that morning. I don't think there was class that morning. That's what the problem was with the dance classes. So she woke up and she decided to help her dad go to work with her dad to help her dad pack up some boxes because he was moving a shop. So she was actually in a really good mood. She went to the shop. She helped him pack up some boxes. One of her friends that just came back from Australia, an old boyfriend, had just come back from Australia a week before that, and he was actually at the shop helping too. And then all three of them came back to the house. My husband and her friend had lunch in the kitchen, and Morgan decided she wasn't hungry because she had a big breakfast. So she went in my office, used my shower while I was working on my computer, came out, helped me pick out a tag that she wanted to order online for her puppy. It had dragonflies on it because she loves dragonflies. And she went and she had a towel wrapped around her, and she went in her bedroom and started getting ready to go out. And so in the meantime, my husband and her old friend left to go into Aspen to do a job. And I went in Morgan's room to talk to her to see if she wanted me to make some lunch, because I hadn't had lunch yet either. And she said she wasn't hungry, and she at that time was sitting on the floor in front of her mirror with her stereo blasting and her puppy right there, and she was just blow-drying her hair and putting on music, and she was just, you know, and putting on makeup and getting all gussied up, I guess you could say. And I asked her what she was doing, because it was a little unusual, and she was really happy, and she said that she was going to pick up her friend Danny and hang out with him for a little while, and then she'd be back probably within 2 hours when I was off from work, and then we would go do errands together, and she was taking my car. So I said, okay. So she got all dressed up, and she left, and she left the puppy with me, actually, because she was going to see this guy, Danny. And so she left, and then after 2 hours or so, when I got off from work, I started texting her, and she never answered me. So for 4 hours, she didn't answer me. So I was pretty frantic, because that was very unusual.
Unlike her, yes.
No, it wasn't like her. So I didn't know where she went or what she was doing, because she had said she was coming home with my car, and I had her puppy. So finally, Steve got home at 6 o'clock, and it was dark now, and I was really upset. And so I said, get in the car right now. We're going into Carbondale. We have to find Morgan. I don't know where she is. So we got in the car. We went to Carbondale, and he texted her and said, oh, we're going to your favorite restaurant for dinner. You want to meet us? He was trying to bribe her. And so she answered him, and she said, no, I'm not really hungry. I'm just at Danny's grandmother's house, and just text me and let me know when you come home, because she wasn't allowed to be home unless we were there. And so Steve said, okay, I'll just text you. And so we went to a different restaurant, not her favorite, because she wasn't with us. And then we went to the grocery store, and we stocked up on all her favorite foods, you know, pomegranates, everything, and yogurts and stuff. And then we went home, and on our way home, I texted her and said that, you know, we're home, and she said, okay, I'll be right there. And then at about, I don't know, 8:45 maybe or so, I texted her again, and I said, where are you? I thought you were on your way home. We told you we were coming home. And she said, I'm on my way right now. I'll be home soon. So I sat there and waited for her, and she got home a few minutes after 9. And when she walked in, I was angry, and I said, why didn't you text me? I've been worried sick. And she just yelled at me and went in her room because she that was typical. And the next mm-hmm. morning she would always apologize. She didn't get a chance this time, but I didn't take it to heart. And so then I went in the room and I told her father what happened, and I said, why don't you go in there and talk to her? So then he went in the room a few minutes later, and her room was dark, and she was laying on her stomach with her feet up in the air and, you know, leaning on her arms and texting somebody, and she was all happy. Her legs were going back and forth, and he thought she was in her jammies, and it was dark in the room, and he said, oh, I'll come back later. You're on the phone. And she said, no, I just sent the text. Come on in, Dad, and we'll talk. And so he came in, and they talked for about 15, 20 minutes about just, you know, happy stuff, normal stuff, you know, mm-hmm. talking about maybe taking another painting class together. Then she started telling him she didn't feel so great, and she had to go babysitting the next day, which was Friday, for the whole weekend until Sunday night with the military kids again, which she loved doing. But she said she was worried that maybe she'd get them sick because she was starting to cough. Mm-hmm. So Steve said, well, wait till morning, and if you still feel like you might be able to be contagious, then your mom or you can call up Amy and just tell her that you can't make it. She goes, well, I don't want to do that. I feel really bad at the last minute to bail on her. And he said, well, we'll just wait till morning and see. And then he got kind of choked up because it was a strain for him, too. And
yes.
You know, and his voice broke, and he said that he told Morgan, he came back to bed and told me this, and he said that his voice broke, and he said, Morgan, I really wish I could run faster to catch this guy. And Morgan said, it's okay, Daddy, I love you. And that was the very last thing she said to him.
Oh, my God. Oh, my heart.
I know. It was really hard.
Oh, Tony, I am so sorry.
But at least she got to say that to him. That was good.
And you know she would have said it to you, too, in the morning.
Oh,
you know she would have.
She always did. I used to always tease her, whenever she said that the next day, you know, she'd go, oh, I'm so sorry. This happened or that happened, and there's no excuse, and I shouldn't have snapped at you. And I'd always look at her and go, your brother and sister never apologized.
That just goes to show her character and how strong it truly was. We're talking with Tony Ingram. Her daughter, Morgan, was stalked. And very tragically, Morgan was found dead in December of 2011, first ruled natural causes, then changed to suicide, and everything points to anything but a suicide. Tony, hold on. We have a couple of questions here really quickly.
Sure.
I want to get to them, if you can hang on just a second.
Sure.
That way. Do you want to take a break? Do you need to go get some water? Or?
Oh, no, I'm fine. I have.
Are you sure? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good. We'll get to what was in her stomach and how you think she died in just a moment, but this is a very interesting question from Steely Dan. We've talked about the stalker, in case you're just joining us. The stalker is a boyfriend. We do not know this. We are thinking this is a possibility. It's a hypothetical,
right,
that the stalker is a boyfriend of a girl that Morgan didn't really want to hang out with, and perhaps the girl felt disrespected in some way. And
exactly.
This girl's not someone you would want to hang around with, been arrested,
right.
You know, all drugs, beating people up, just not a good person at all. Certainly somebody that you wouldn't want your daughter to hang around with. But we are thinking that perhaps it's a boyfriend that was the stalker. Could the stalker have been the woman rather than the boyfriend? Or have you seen enough of the face and the body to tell that it is the boyfriend?
On all the views that we caught of the real stalker, you know, you, in the middle of the night, going here, going there on the camera, and the way he would run and the body type and everything, it was definitely a guy. But I do believe that she was involved.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have a lot of professional people on Web Sleuths who take interest in these cases, and especially in your case. Anyway, they say the half-life of the two medications that showed up in Morgan's system would indicate that she took or was given the drugs during the late afternoon, early evening. So why would you
have an answer for that one.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well,
what's
first
the answer?
Of all, I have to say that no one's seen the actual second lab test. The first lab test, he just took the blood, and the lab had the blood, and they tested it just for the normal, regular, everyday stuff, and that's when they came back with the amitriptyline. He said it was insignificant. It was anything but insignificant. And so that's why we were arguing about it that whole time for months. And that's why a murder investigation was never launched. So that was huge. That was a
Tony,
big
Tony,
mistake.
Let me stop you. Explain to us what that drug is. What's it called again?
It's, It's called amitriptyline. It's a prescription drug. Morgan was exposed to carbon monoxide when she was younger. She was 12 years old. So by age 13, Children's Hospital put her on a 10-milligram dose because she was having such horrible headaches and pain in her upper quadrant of her stomach. So they put her on amitriptyline, 10 milligrams, which I think is the lowest you can get. And it helped a little bit, but not a lot. So eventually we took her to Dr. Zelter, who's fabulous, at UCLA Medical Center. And she was tested for all kinds of things, and she went to a lot of doctors there at the pediatric department. And Dr. Zelter ended up being her main doctor. And she put her on, pushed it up to 25 milligrams, which is still a really low dose, but it seemed to really take the edge off of the headaches and the pain in her stomach, and it really helped a lot. But then when Morgan got older, you know, she's 18, we'll say she's 18 or almost 18, she no longer wanted to be on pills. She was very into natural things. She would do juicing in the morning. She walked around with a water bottle all the time. She would eat raw vegetables. She didn't even like them steamed. I mean, she was very into all this organic and very healthy foods. I'm not saying it's bad. It was great. But she was just different. You know, she wasn't, mm-hmm. she didn't want to take non-natural things. So she stopped taking all of her pills. And then, okay. except she, I think she still kept taking birth control pills at that time. And that was all she took. And so she went through, she went to another doctor in Basalt and went through the hyperbaric chamber treatments. And when she was done with that, that was it. She was great. She was able to take ballet, rock climb, bicycle, just do everything physical again.
Now,
and
isn't that what they give?
A happy person.
Isn't that what they give scuba divers that have the bands, don't they?
I think so. I think so, yeah. This is what they give them for carbon monoxide. For the
Well, how did she get exposed? It must have been a horrible exposure to have it affect her all these years through her life. What happened?
Yeah, isn't that strange? I don't know that much about it. Honestly, we've been to so many specialists and talked to so many people. And what happened was the place that we were leasing at the time we didn't know this, but I guess that one, the three townhomes that were in this one building had caught on fire before we ever moved into them. And so when they redid them, they rebuilt them, they put the flues in incorrectly on the roof, on our unit.
Oh,
and
no.
So what happened is after 12 months of her having flu-like symptoms and all these things, she was getting chronic low levels and some high levels of carbon monoxide constantly, and she would get sick, and then she'd have to stay home. And when she'd stay home, she'd get more carbon monoxide. And we didn't realize what was going on because we did not have our alarms plugged in at the time. It was a rental, so we'd never unpacked them. And so finally, after going to all these specialists, and she was just really bad after 12 months,
mm-hmm.
Steve, you know, went out and he looked on, I guess, WebMD, maybe it was,
mm-hmm.
and we had eliminated so many things after being tested for so many things, and they were all negative, and it came down to two things, and one of them was carbon monoxide. So he ran to the lumber store, and he bought some carbon monoxide detectors and plugged them in, and sure enough, they started going off.
Oh, my
so,
gosh.
We got her out of there, obviously, and then we had
yes.
the head of the building department and the head of the fire department come out the next day and look, and they stood back and they figured out exactly what it was. It was the flus. And we were up against the hillside, so it was strange. You know, it was winter, and then the breeze would come down and it would push the stuff back down into the house,
mm-hmm.
I guess. So, anyway.
Oh, that's just terrible. I can't even imagine. Well, thank God that your husband got on WebMD and did his own investigation, because, boy,
exactly.
that's very scary stuff. Okay, let's get back.
It was bad.
Let's get back to the horrible, tragic death of your daughter, Morgan. How do you think she was killed? How could this stalker have gotten in there, had no sign? I mean, there was no, you know, signs of strangulation. There was no physical fight. What in the world could have happened?
Well, there's some problems. First of all, you know, our front door lock and our sliding glass door lock in the back were broken separately, you know, different times in the beginning of this whole thing, and we never in our brains put that two and two together. I mean, your brains don't go there. We weren't used to this. And
mm-hmm.
so when Steve replaced the front door lock, he decided, now that we had a stalker, that he was going to put on this heavy-duty code, you know, lock, which is like a deadbolt, and it has four numbers on it that you push.
Right, you have to, yeah, right.
Right, a code. Mm-hmm. And so we had two different codes, one for Morgan, one for us, and then we took her code off, and we switched the codes halfway through because the stalker would come in the middle of the night, and we would hear him trying to push the little buttons on the lock. And then one morning, something woke me up. I have no idea what it was. And I just kind of got up, and I woke Steve up, and we kept the lights off, and he went in the kitchen to make some coffee, and it was 4:30 in the morning, which is very early for us. And I went as quiet as a mouse, and I sat at the end of the couch, and I just stared at the front door, thinking, I wonder if he's going to come try to push the lock. And sure enough, he showed up on the front porch with light on the front porch, and I saw him in a hoodie. And he saw me at the same time I saw him, and he took off running. He knocked the motion alarm out of the aspen tree. My husband took off out the front door after him and, mm-hmm. of course, didn't catch him because it was dark, and he took off, and he was faster. And so I actually saw him that one time. That time. I saw him one other time, too, but that was right up on our porch. So he either got in through, after 4 months of practicing with this, our friend from OSI said within 24 hours without the thing that covers the buttons, without that, anybody can figure it out within 24 hours what the code is, and it lights up at night when you're pushing in the code too, which is bad. Or another thing we just recently found out, we didn't even know this until now, didn't think of it, Steve is going to be putting it on the website. The two sliding back doors that we had actually had mm-hmm. key locks on them. We were in that house for 6.5 years renting that house, and I never knew there were key locks on those doors because I have the same sliding glass doors now, and I've never seen key locks on them.
Right.
And then Steve said that the father of B, three houses down, who was mm-hmm. living there, that let K live in the house with them, was the president of the association, and he had told Steve months before the stalking started that he had keys to all the empty homes in the neighborhood in order to get in if there was ever a problem. And then a few weeks ago here, I put two and two together, and I said, oh, my gosh, he could have had keys to those back doors, which we never even had. They were the original locks, and these guys could have gotten the keys from him, too.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have gotten in the back doors without any sign of break-in. They could have gotten in through the code. They could have gotten in the 2 hours that we were all three gone and the dogs were locked up, you know, and hidden in somewhere
yeah.
in the room or in the house. There's so many
right. That would be, I would think, the most logical thing, because the dogs, you know, they're so, even if you have a little yappy dog, they can hear those noises that we can't hear. So, okay, so he gets in, and I know this is painful, and I apologize, but please understand, we want to help, and we need to know as much information as possible. But if you feel that it's too much, Tony, we can stop, okay?
Sure.
How do you think he killed her? I mean, this is kind of amazing when you think about it. He seems like he did it without leaving any trace.
Yeah, it does, but then it's easy when there's no investigation. But anyway, now on the second lab test that Dr. Doberson ran, Kurtzman ran, it's bizarre to me when I read this because, number one, it says that they were sent these samples, the sample of the gastric fluid. They were sent this. They did not already have it. So obviously the pathologist still had this frozen somewhere. So he sent it to the AIT labs. They ran it. Well, when they ran it, they found in her gastric fluid, they found the amitriptyline, but they also found this other drug, the Flexeril, which she's never used. She never had used that. We didn't have it in our house anywhere. She's never used it. I didn't even know what it was. But not only that, there also showed up unsuitable because they didn't have enough sample, but it showed up like it was hitting it on the lab thing that this was in there, but they couldn't get an amount. Was also two other things, the sleeping pill flurazepam, I don't even know what that is,
mm-hmm.
and also this other thing which is called, it's a metabolite of that one drug. What's it called? I can't even say it. It's disulfiram, something
mm-hmm.
like that. I don't know. But anyway, so we believe, and Dr. Doberson believes, that she was given a date rape cocktail. And I don't know whether they injected her with it. They never did a rape kit, so I don't know whether they put it in her some other way or if they put chloroform or ketamine or something on a rag and put it over her face while she was sleeping, and the puppy, who was a sound sleeper too, and she was really little then, and so that she couldn't bite back, and then held her up and poured it down her throat. I have no idea. I really honestly don't.
Okay.
But it was liquid, whatever it was.
Whatever
and
you feel that.
And I've had two veterinarians, just so you know, that work and have clinics in this valley, that after they read my blog, they said, oh my gosh, we have amitriptyline, we have transdermal amitriptyline that we sell over the counter to people for their horse, for a 1,200-pound horse. Morgan was 115 pounds. If they had given her, and the horse ranch was right behind us, and this girl's mother also worked at the ranch, if they had given her a transdermal of the amitriptyline along with this other stuff, I mean, that would have killed her so fast.
Just quite quickly without... Boy, that's just awful.
And she was completely articulate and fine when Steve talked to her, so she didn't have it before she went to bed that night, before she got home.
Okay,
I do not believe they slipped it to her before that.
Well, but the amitriptyline, wouldn't that have had to have been in her system earlier based on the ME reports? I mean, you know, according to some of the experts we have, it seems like it should have been in there earlier. Can you
Unfortunately, that's not what Dr. Doberson says. He says because if you look at the amitriptyline versus the nortriptyline and the two different numbers, nortriptyline is made by the amitriptyline. When you die, it turns into nortriptyline.
Okay.
And if you've been taking it all along or if you've had it in advance, the nortriptyline and the amitriptyline numbers are closer together. These numbers are completely apart. They're not even close.
She
believes that she was given it and she died within a half an hour.
Oh. Did they, first of all, did the original Emmy ever explain how he missed the Flexerol in Morgan's stomach? Have you ever heard from him about this?
Nope, not at all.
Of course not. I knew the answer to that.
He didn't run a test for it. It wasn't even on that test at all, on the first lab test.
And they didn't test under Morgan's fingernails. They did no sort of testing to see if she fought back, right?
Nope, and when we had the viewing, we had a viewing which was against everything, I believe, but my son talked us into having a viewing, so we bought a casket and had a viewing, and I wouldn't go near the casket, and my sister from California, who's a manicurist, came up to me and she said, did Morgan always keep her nails like that? And I said, what are you talking about? Because she had just had a French manicure the day before, and I thought, that's pretty normal. What's wrong with a French manicure? Well, number one, they should have taken off her nail polish to look for injection marks under her nails, which obviously they did not do. But then when I walked over the casket, guess what? On her right hand, her pinky, the next finger, and the next finger, so three fingers in a row, were like cut at an angle, her nails. And so I asked, I called up Dr. Kristen, I said, did you cut her nails in order to get samples or something? That was the obvious conclusion to me because I'm still trusting at that point. And he said he never cut her nails. They were in perfect condition, and it must have been the funeral home. On the way to the funeral home, they must have damaged her body. Well, you know, a body isn't something that you damage. I mean, you have to have a little respect.
Well, I don't know how they could damage the fingernails. That's odd. That makes absolutely no sense, Tony.
And she was right-handed, and that would be like a defensive thing. And
right, a defensive thing.
And he said they weren't like that. He said that they were perfect. And so then I said, well, do you have pictures of them? And no one will show me pictures.
Tony, is there a possibility of an exhumation here? Is that what we're heading toward?
Nope. No.
You don't think
so? She was cremated.
Okay.
That was another huge mistake on my part. Huge. She wanted to be cremated just like I want to be cremated, but it was a huge mistake. My sister reminds me of that every week.
Well, you know, nobody knows what they'll do when they get in a position like that. Please don't beat yourself up because it sounds like there's still plenty of evidence here to do the right thing and to make sure that Morgan gets justice. So for the sake of all the people that are listening and that are falling in love with you and want to help you, please don't beat yourself up, okay?
I won't. Thank you.
Okay, because you're doing such...
And we still have her hairbrush that shows, you know, she used it when she did her hair that morning when she left, that afternoon, and when she was blow-drying her hair. We have that. That's been bagged from day one. We have her mattress in case anything went into her mattress. We have that bagged up. We did save things, but it's not chain of custody, though. That's the problem.
You're right. That is the problem, but... I'm certainly not an expert. I'm just a layperson looking at this. It looks like with the right investigation, this could be a fairly easy way to solve. I don't want to say easy, that's not the right term. If you have the right investigators that are smart and diligent, the right investigation can take place. So
I believe that because I believe there's people that know what happened too, and I know who they are, and I know they've never been talked to, and I just don't know who to trust. I don't know who to get to do this.
Well, you're starting out great with Dr. Doberson. If you have an attorney, I know this is a lot, very expensive, but you need an advocate on the law end of it. And you need to get the media on your side. We can certainly help you with that. That's no problem there. And if you have a PI, that might help as well. But all of those things we can certainly talk about and help you with. I want to get back a little bit to the interview here because we still have a few more questions, okay?
Certainly.
When did you first believe that it was natural causes, right? When did you start to question the cause of death? When did it start to kind of dawn on you?
As soon as I got the PER.
PER, what is that?
We were told it was a mystery until we got the PER.
PER,
so
what is PER?
So we had a setback. PER is post-mortem examination report, which
okay.
is the autopsy in the lab, and that took almost 6 weeks. So we were kind of in a bubble of grief, and we had no idea how she died. And so we just believed, okay, well, we're going to find out. And then we got the report, and it said natural causes. And I said, okay, if it's natural causes, then why is this one thing showing up? So that's when we started questioning
the doctor. Right, exactly. Have you thought about getting an attorney? An attorney can help you obtain documents and all kinds of investigation material.
I would love to find a really good attorney. I haven't been able to find a really good attorney. And what I did was I went through COVA, which is the Colorado Organization of Victims Association or something like that. I can't remember what it stands for. But they have their own victims attorneys. There's two of them that were actually that help people. And one of them, was helping us in the beginning, but he was trying to get the investigation reopened by going through the DEA's office, and then the sheriff, Lou Valario, came out on camera and said, this case will never be reopened, and I'm so sorry, the parents are having a hard time accepting this was suicide. And so then now the lawyer has not called me back because
that was the end of it
now,
for that lawyer. Well, that person is not an advocate for you. Have you been able to obtain any of the police reports, either for the stalking, 911 calls, or the investigation into Morgan's death? Have they given you anything?
No, none of them. We haven't. I've asked many questions over the phone, and I've text messaged and emailed, but I haven't gone down there and demanded. I have not. I just haven't done it. I don't know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, again, an attorney and a PI can certainly help you with those types of things. Is there any physical evidence whatsoever that stalker has been in your home or around your home? I know you took the pictures of the footsteps, but
and
is there anything
else?
And also
after we moved out of that house, because and then the bank put it up for sale after we moved out, because the person we were leasing it from went into foreclosure on it, and so it was sold to somebody else. But before it was sold, my husband, somebody gave us a tip that this guy was on the roof. So my husband and I called up the sheriff, and we asked them to go get on the roof. And they said, without an okay from the bank, because you guys moved out, we can't do it. So then we tried to get the okay from the bank, and Wells Fargo said, no, we weren't going to let them do it, which was shocking to me. Mm-hmm. But then the realtor turned around and said, go ahead, just tell them to do it. And so, because she knew what was going on. So we called them, and we told them the realtor said it's okay to go on the roof. Well, they just never did. So then my husband went and had my grandson, he told my grandson, go up, I'm going to record you, just take your time and go up the street, because we think this is the tree that he went up. My grandson got up there within, I don't know how many seconds, not pretty fast. And he was No, it didn't take very long. And so then he went over, and then he looked at the gutter all the way around the roof. He looked for signs of things and stuff. And you could see a depression in the roof, he said, where the person could just lay down and nobody could ever see him. But he could see everybody downstairs, people coming, going, the sheriffs, everything. And then he went over to my daughter's room, the window, where she would get knocked, the window would get knocked on because the windows went all the way up to the roof. They were very, very high. And he went over there, and the gutter was like stress cracked from somebody leaning over right in the middle of her window and knocking on her window, or probably looking through her window if he had some kind of contraption, I don't know. But it's completely stress cracked. So my husband has pictures of that. You know, and he gave them to the sheriffs, and they didn't care. And we also found a blade at the same time they were there looking at the roof. The snow had melted at that point. So underneath the tree over by my daughter's bedroom window, there was a blade. So I called up the sheriff, and I begged them to go over there and pick it up because I knew chain of custody, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, tell Steve just to put it in a plastic bag. Don't touch it. And we have no fingerprints to fingerprint it against anyway, so it doesn't really matter, and we can't tell how long it's been there for. And so we took pictures of it, and it's a very unusual blade. It looks like a hunter's or it looks like a skinning blade, like it's a blade on both sides. It's not like a normal blade that you'd put in a utility tool or something to, you know, cut boxes open or something. It looks like a specialized type of a blade.
And so did you bag it? Do you have it?
Yes.
Okay,
no, they
haven't.
So they put it in evidence. We took pictures of it.
Good.
Everything went into evidence. They never did anything with it.
Well, at least you have that. I mean, there's a lot of things that you do have that can help you continue on with your quest to find the truth about what happened to your daughter. We are talking with Tony Ingram. Tony's daughter, Morgan, was stalked. She was found dead in December of 2011. First, natural causes listed, and then suicide. Tony and her family are absolutely convinced it was the stalker somehow, some way. Tony, I know this is a horrible position for you to be in. As Mark Class says, nobody wants to be in this exclusive club of losing a child like this.
Yeah.
If there's anything Web Sleuth can do for you, let us know, please. If you can get us any of the pictures or videos, we have people here that can do all kinds of things and blow it up so you can see it better. And I mean, what they can do is absolutely amazing. It even amazes the police departments, to be honest. I've had police call me and say, wow, the work that you guys do is absolutely amazing. I take no credit for it. It's everybody else. They do all the hard work. So
we put all the videos on Dropbox too, because we were sharing them with the detective. So we do have all that on Dropbox, and
that would be
great. They took our DVR of the video cameras because we were so upset. We weren't about to try to look at the films for the last couple of days on the camera, you know, to review them because our daughter died. So they took the cameras, and after about 2 or 3 months, I said, you know, did you find anything? And he told me that we don't have time to look through them. And I said, that's when I got mad. And I said, I want them back. So they took some more time because they had to copy them first so that it would be chain of custody. And then once they copied them, then they gave them back. And then Steve and I spent hours and hours reviewing them again. And we actually do see somebody running from the back of our house to the front of our house and ducking behind our neighbor's car in the middle of the night, the same night she was killed.
Mm. Oh, my God. Okay, so just so you know, we're here for you. I'll get in touch with you after the show in the week, and we'll get some of this information. We'll decide what you want to give to us, what you want to put up on the forum or however. Whatever you want to do, you just tell me. And look at Web Sleuths as this big army from around the world that wants to help you find the truth. That's all they want to do. These people are the most incredible, caring bunch you could ever find, Tony. And, Tony, I just want to say you are a very brave woman. I know your heart is broken and it must be a struggle every day, but you're doing it for your daughter. And I am so grateful that she has an advocate like you, and we want to be an advocate for you and your family. So, Tony, if there's ever anything you can do or anything we can do for you, please don't hesitate to let us know. We're going to have you on the show with regular updates, and we're here for you, Tony, anytime, day or night, okay?
I greatly appreciate it.
You bet, Tony. And we'll be in touch, and then we will we'll just go from there. Okay, Tony?
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony. You take care now.
Bye bye.
Wow, Kimster. Wow, that was just amazing. I know I keep using the word amazing, but I don't know what else to say.
I think what they're doing for their daughter is so commendable. I think it's wonderful. It's going to help victims in the future, stalking victims, mm-hmm. And families who think the investigation may not have gone deep enough, just shows them how to use the internet and what to do. And I'm so thankful that they're doing this in their daughter's name.
Yeah, absolutely. And all our members want to do is find out the truth. And boy, I'll tell you what, once they latch onto a case, it's like a dog with a bone with a lot of meat on it. They do not want to let go. Kimster, up next we have, and I'm going to use this word amazing again. It's my new favorite word, an amazing poster. And we just call her Rain 1212. How are you, my dear? Are you there?
I'm here, Tricia. How are you this evening?
I am great, and thank you so much for joining us tonight. Rain, you and your group on Web Sleuths, I just want to say something. These people that have come on Web Sleuths have just come on their own. I have nothing to do with it. Kimster didn't do anything. They just showed up on Web Sleuths and started helping with the unclaimed forum. What they're doing is some incredible work. They're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts. Rain, I'm going to let you explain to us what the unclaimed forum is and what you do.
Okay. Well, what our unclaimed forum is individual cases throughout the United States with the medical examiners. Mm-hmm. These people have passed away, but there is no next of kin known. California, for one, right now has over 2,000 cases.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
we
my
have
gosh.
Their names.
2,000?
California, the web, I think I have the link up on, has it listed. There's over 2,000 cases in California right now. Yes. Mm-hmm. We haven't posted all of them. We've only got page 6 posted. But these individuals have passed away, of their names, their birth dates. Some instances we have last known addresses. So we take this information and we start researching. Depending on when they were born, of course, we have access to all the census records. Mm-hmm. And what we do is we look for family members, mother, father, brother, sister, cousins, whatever we can find with addresses and phone numbers to let them know that their loved one passed away. I have posted a couple of articles in the unclaimed forum. One was 2011 in California alone. There was a mass burial, I believe it was over 1,600 unclaimed.
Wow.
And
that's
the reason why I got involved. These people need to go home to their families. We use research tools like RootsWeb, Ancestry.com, Obit.com, I believe it is, Family Search, archives, newspaper archives, military records, all kinds of things just to find a family member. In August, we had 16 matches. There were
16
families that we 16 families
that
we found
wonderful.
And brought them home. Now, there are cases where we find family, and for some reason, the family will not claim the body. One, it could be economic issues, or it could be they are estranged from the family. Mm-hmm. I worked on one case last week of California by the last name of Rose. He had died in 1997 or 98, I believe. I located his brother in one day. He had not heard from his brother since like in the 70s.
Oh,
he did not even know his brother had died. Now, I personally work with several of the medical examiners throughout the United States. I work with the ones in San Bernardino, St. Louis, Charleston, and Greenville, South Carolina. I do have their permission to call on their behalf
mm-hmm.
when I locate these family members, and I have delivered a lot of bad news when I reach them. Of course, I tell them, I know things that I can't tell them, and there's things
like
that
what?
I know with my medical examiners, they confide in me a lot of cause of death.
Things that you can't tell them. Right, right. I see what
right.
you're saying.
Things I cannot post on Web Sleuths. I
mm-hmm.
know state of decomposition. I know their medical history.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these people are homeless. They change their names or use fictitious names and fictitious Social Security numbers. So there's a lot of research that has to go along with this. I have a sidekick. I call her my little sidekick, and mm-hmm. it's Nemo's mom.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. and she is wonderful. We work together a lot. We are on the phone together on Friday and Saturday nights until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning working these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Nemo's mom has relationships with the medical examiner in Spokane and in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, you know, Spokane contacted us by email when we were working on other cases, you know, that's listed on Web Sleuth, and asked us to help them find Katie Northridge's family. So, of course, we drop what we're doing, and we help the medical examiner. We found out that Katie Northridge, who had passed away August the 22nd in hospice, gave no information except for that name, which was a fictitious name.
Oh, my gosh.
But she did give the correct birth date. So Nemo's mom and I started working about 11 o'clock that Friday night. By 1:30 in the morning, we had found out that her name was Linda Suzanne Bailey. We had found her sister and her daughter. They were notified. Spokane likes to notify their own, on their own
mm-hmm.
families. By Sunday, we had the email back that her sister and daughter were glad to have known where the sister was, but they were saddened regarding the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
They hadn't seen her in 8 years.
It doesn't, you know, that just must be an amazing feeling to know that you are, even though it is sad and tragic information, at least they know. I mean, at least, thank God, you're there doing something so they don't have to sit there and wonder all the way up to their deathbed what happened to their loved one. It must be hard, though, to call with that information. I mean, it takes a truly incredible person that has the ability to deliver the information without being overly emotional, but yet compassionate. How do you do it, Rain? How do you do it?
I just try to step aside. Of course, I always give my condolences.
Mm-hmm.
And with one particular case, Miss Bowers, it was a Greenville, South Carolina case. And her mother pretty much knew how she was.
Mm-hmm.
She was homeless, had traveled from Florida to Savannah, had been arrested in Savannah, which, you know, we find their criminal records and things like that. We pretty much know their whole background history.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get a hold of Miss Bowers in North Carolina, and I just basically told her my name, which I will give them my personal name, and depending on which medical examiner I'm working with, and I just let them know that I'm assisting, like with her case, the Greenville medical examiner. I'm looking for a relative of Deborah Bowers, born on
mm-hmm.
such and such date. And at that moment when I said that, that woman's voice, why? And you could hear it in her voice. And I told her, I said, well, Mrs. Bowers, because she was still Mrs. Bowers. I said, Mrs.
Yeah.
Bowers, I'm really sorry that I have to deliver this news, but your daughter has passed away. She broke. So I had to keep
God.
My composure.
I don't know how you do it. Mm-hmm.
It's hard. And then from that point, I get all the questions. What happened? You know, where was she? What happened? You know, how is she? You know, just one thing after another. It just kind of runs together.
How long, Rain, let me interrupt you. How long had it been again since this? Since the mother, Bowers, had talked to her daughter?
Ten years.
That's so sad.
10 years. And, of course, she was homeless, and she was into the drug scene and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can't go any further because I don't know if Miss Bowers is listening or whatever. But, and I just give her the information to, you know, because she starts asking these questions. And with
mm-hmm.
any of the family members, I give them the case number, the telephone number to the
Oh, can you put center. Your, can you put your mouthpiece to your mouth? You kind of went kind of in a tunnel there.
I'm sorry.
There we
is
go.
That better?
That's better. Thank you so much. Have you ever had anybody, like, just get mad at you and scream at you and say, I don't care, or hang up, or have you ever had anything unusual like that? What, really?
They don't really get mad and scream and just hang up, but they just, like, we already know. We don't care.
That's
we've been estranged. We don't care. Don't bother us again.
Oh, wow. And then that all you
and
can do.
And there was a case not too long ago out mm-hmm. of Charleston.
And what happened?
The sister knew. She had found out later in the years that she had, her other sister had died. And the two sisters, apparently there were problems within the family with the mother, the father, the sister that passed away. Apparently by her police record had been doing some stealing, and, you know, that's all on the internet, so I can talk about that. And it just went downhill.
Oh, and they broke ties.
Can
you imagine?
Broke ties from them.
Oh, yeah, I can. And sometimes they have to. I mean, if they've, you know, had been in drugs and they've given him chance after chance after chance, or just sometimes you have to, for your own sanity, you know, cut ties. But it's just, it's tragic that, you know, a person is born, they have, you know, one or two parents, they might have siblings, they have people that care about them through their lives, that they end up where nobody wants their body. That is heartbreaking.
That's how do we
get like that in our society? I think it's very, very sad. But Rain, what you and the other members of Web Sleuths are doing in the Unclaimed Forum is absolutely, I'm trying to think of another word other than amazing, because I've used that 300 times tonight. It is the most compelling and incredible work I have seen. Now, somebody listening that is not a member of Web Sleuths might be thinking, well, that's great, but I don't have all these skills and I don't have all this stuff. Why should I even bother going into the Unclaimed Forum? Let's convince people that they too can join in and help. Tell us how.
The reason, from my personal experience and from Nemo's mom, just experience that we've had doing in our lives, being in the Unclaimed Forum, I look at it this way. These people have passed away. And like you said, they have mothers, brothers, sisters, family that have been searching for them, and they have no clue that they have died. I would not want my family member laying in a morgue or in a mass grave without a proper burial.
Right.
I would want to know in my heart where my loved one is. So I've kind of like taken the Unclaimed to heart. These people, they don't deserve to be, no matter what they've done in their lives and their past, they don't deserve to be laying there unclaimed.
They don't deserve
we
to be ignored.
To
right.
No, they do not. And just burying people in a mass grave, you know, to me that gets to my heart. And it happens throughout the United States.
Oh, every state.
And it's the feeling, you know, I get a good feeling when we find a match. We all do. We have some incredible people that help us. Miss Sunshine, Carmack, and Tiff Lee. If they are listening, you guys are wonderful. Nemo's mom knows how wonderful she is because we
right.
work long hours. We keep case files. Nemo's mom and I do. We keep files on each individual. And the people that I just mentioned, they know to send myself and Nemo's mom a private message with phone numbers and information. These medical examiners are so overwhelmed with not just unclaimed, but with other things that's happening in their jurisdictions, they don't have time to read emails. They don't have time to research. But I look at getting involved with the Unclaimed is, it's just heartwarming. I mean, you're helping someone.
You're
bringing
closure
to someone's family.
You're making a difference. You're making a difference. But, Rain, can other people join in? I mean, if somebody hasn't joined Web Sleuths and they're thinking about it, can they join in and help? How do you get involved?
Oh, yes, they can join in and help. All they need to do is go to the Unclaimed Forum or a sub-forum in the Unidentified. We have a list of all the resources there that you can start as far as the internet searches for Ancestry, Roots Web. I mean, the list goes on and on. They can send me a private message or Nemo's a private message or anyone that Miss Sunshine, Tiff Lee, or Carmack, if they're feel well enough to direct how to direct them. I'm always available to tell them, help them start. Just pick a case. Start. First, go to the Social Security Death Index. Kind of verify the birthdays because sometimes some of these things get a little mixed up.
Right.
From there, depending on their age, sometimes you can get the parents' last name. You can do census searches. with parents' last names, if you kind of got a birth date, which we usually have a good birth date on all of our people that are in claimants, in the unclaimed.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do census searches, find siblings. We use, you know, you've got last known address, and this Zobis search is not the greatest research tool, but you can put in their name in the state that they were in last and pull up a search. And if we have their last known address, it will pull that last known address, possibly addresses that they have lived before. Then
mm-hmm.
you can search backwards. We look at property tax records, online property tax records, and see if they've owned any property in the area. I mean, there's just so much they can do. They don't need to get discouraged and get scared. Oh, I can't do this. It's too hard.
And
it's not like
a clique. It's not like a club. Everybody is welcome. And to join Web Sleuths, you just click on the little icon at the top of the page there, and it's free to join. You just need an email address. Right, Rain? I mean, it's not that difficult. It's not an exclusive club. We want others to join in, because there's people out there, Rain, that don't think they matter, and they do. They matter to us, and we want them to join, right?
Oh, yes, we want as many people as we can get to join. I would love to have the unclaimed forum, have it full of people working, and totally wipe it out. That means
wouldn't
we
that
have
be great?
Sent everybody home. Oh, that would be wonderful. It means we'd send everyone home.
That would be. Rain, I just want to thank you, Nemo's mom, and everybody in the Unclaimed Forum. You have done so much for so many. You never look for thanks. You never look for attention. But I want to give you the attention you deserve. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart, from Sue, our co-owner, from everybody on Web Sleuths, for all that you do. Thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you, Tricia. And if anyone has any questions, I mean, they can send me a private message, or if anyone's on now that needs to ask me a question, I would be more than glad to answer it. All they've got to do is send me a private message.
Thank you. Thank you so, so much. But Nemo's mom is here. Do you think she wants to say hi real quick?
She might.
She might. Nemo's mom, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot like this, but I just want to thank you personally, because I know that you spend a lot of your valuable time working, just like Rain1212 does, to find the family members of the unclaimed. So on behalf of everyone, thank you. Is there anything you would like to add?
Please do, Nemo.
Well,
you help a lot.
Well, Rain is amazing. We'll start
yes.
there. And it's so rewarding, you know. It's something anybody can do.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the tools are free or very, very low cost, and it's so rewarding in sort of a bizarre way, you know, because the person has died, but you can help the family,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody matters, like Rain said, and everybody's family deserves to know what happened to them. And, you know, it's just, I've told Rain before, you know, I'm not good with facial recognition and matching up missing to unidentified, and
mm-hmm.
many of the current cases kind of break my heart. But this is something I can do, and I believe anybody can do.
Well, you are living proof that if somebody wants to do something to help, all they need to do is jump on the computer. And that's the beauty of it, Nemo's mom and Rain1212. I didn't do anything. We just set up the forum. You all came in and did this yourself. And that, to me, makes this an incredible story in itself, because the fact that you thought to do this, I don't think I'd ever think to do something like this. So thank you again. And Nemo's mom and Rain1212, bless you for all you do. And from, again,
Tricia, before we go, I would like to say one thing.
Go
to
right
let
ahead.
You know what else is going to be taking place.
Okay.
Nemo's mom and I are working on a list of all the medical examiners throughout the United States.
Wow.
We
are going to
be splitting the list. We're going to be contacting these medical examiners and building a relationship with them. similar to what we have now, with me working as a personal, like as an assistant to the medical examiners.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be posting cases on Web Sleuths as we get them. Even the ones that we work on, like with Nemo's mom, Spokane, the Katie Northridge case, even though she was never listed anywhere, she was posted on Web Sleuths under the unclaimed as a match. But mm-hmm. we welcome everybody. All the help we can get. Like I said, we have over 2,000 cases just in California right now. And we have already listed all of the cases from claimus.org. They are already listed on Web Sleuths, mm-hmm. each individual case, which was probably, Mimo's mom may have to help me here, probably 268 cases, I believe.
Yeah. So, 16 pages with, I don't know, like 20 a page. But some of them have been solved, so, you know, it's a significant number.
Well, that is going to be a great tool for everybody to have, because I don't think there's a list like that anywhere of the medical examiners. That's probably that's going to help a lot of people all over the country. So, again, if there's anything you need, Rain or Nemo's mom, you know how to contact me. We'll do whatever we can to help you. And again, bless you for all you do. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Tricia. Okay, thank you very much.
Take care. Kimster. Kimster.
Yes, I'm here.
What a show. I am emotionally drained. I don't know about you.
Well, I wanted to add something about the unclaimed, if you don't mind. But
please, go ahead.
This is really amazing what they did, because what happened was one of our other members, Believe 07, noticed that on NAMIS, which is the missing persons, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, the new one that came out, many of you have heard about it, where it automatically matches DNA and things like that
mm-hmm.
to help find missing and unidentified people. Well, they added this unclaimed area, gosh, I don't think it was more than a year ago. And
mm-hmm.
Believe 09, I might have said 07, Believe 09 went in and she said she wanted to put everybody that's on NAMIS, which is this organization that that Rain was talking about. And so she started listing everybody. Well, Rain came on there, and then soon after, Nemo's mom. And not only do they want this, which was actually born out of NAMIS, you know, the 200, like I think they said 268, now they're talking about adding 2,000 out of California, and they've been establishing these relationships with these coroners and everything, and it's just, or MEs, and it's just amazing how they took an idea and just made it into this. You use the word amazing. This is more than amazing. This is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
there
just so
go.
Pleased. And it just shows, you know, and it's all volunteer, and it just shows the heart of people. And in this day and age, we see so much evil, especially on our forum. We see horrible evil, but yet we see this. And this is just, the kindness of strangers and willingness to volunteer to help families. It's just amazing. It's astounding.
Exactly. And Kimster, I think you have this happen to you as well on Web Sleuths. People will say, boy, you have a great forum. You do some great work. And I'm like, you know, I don't. It's everybody else. It's people I don't know. They just come on and jump in. And that's the beauty of Web Sleuths. And speaking of jumping in, we have a very unique cold case on our Web Sleuths Hot Cold Case of the Week. Kimster, tell us about it.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, gosh, I keep forgetting to get the trumpet. I'll get it next week, I swear.
Okay. Well, Tricia, this week brings another request from one of our members, and this one is to help find a woman named Robin Jobson. Robin was last seen in Flint, Michigan in the spring of 1998. From the 1400 block off of East Hamilton, Robin walked to Lewis Street and then headed north. It's the last time anyone saw her. Some reports state she was leaving from a bar, and but there's been no clothing description given. So there isn't a lot to go on here. At the time she went missing, family members stated that she was dating a man from Kentucky who wasn't very kind to her, and at first they thought she may have went to Kentucky with him, but she wasn't actually reported missing until after she stopped picking up her disability check. She was on disability. Robin had a very difficult life, and she had health issues that left her with a surgical implant in her lower left leg. She was also the mother of four children, and prior to this, she had found herself unable to take care of them, and the children were placed in foster care. Yeah. And then after that, Robin moved from place to place. But like we were saying, you know, with the unclaimed, everybody matters, you know. And
they do.
She had a hard time, and it would have been nice to had she been given the chance to come around. You know, it doesn't
right.
take much for her around and maybe even get her children back. But that wasn't the case for Robin. There's some talk, something about, I've been reading this on the forum and on the internet when I was researching. There's some talk about her being in an abandoned building in Flint, maybe her remains or something, but
mm-hmm.
I'm not real clear on that. So that might be something that Web Sleuth members can dig into a little deeper to help solve the mystery. So get on there. If you want to help Robin's children and family find out what happened to her, please go to www.websleuth.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a picture of Robin along with the link to her thread. And if you're not a member of Web Sleuth, what do?
You just join, by golly, because it's absolutely free, right?
Absolutely free.
Yes.
You know what? Wherever your heart leads you, your heart may lead you to help stalking victims, of which we do have threads in our resource center about stalking and what to do about stalking. Or if you don't find the right thread about stalking, you can create a thread in the Web Sleuth Resource Center and talk about stalking there. We have, you can go to the Morgan Ingram thread. You can help the family solve the case, Morgan's case, that her mom, Tony, was here earlier. You can go to the unclaimed persons and help Nemo's mom and Rain. You can go to unidentified and help Carl K. You could go to the high-profile cases and help law enforcement. There is so much to do on Web Sleuth. So much to do.
Never a dull moment, is there, Kimster?
Oh, never.
Never, never. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us tonight on Trisha's True Crime Radio. Go to websleuth.com to find out about more of the cases. Also, go to our sister forum. That's forumsforjustice.org. There's new information about the JonBenet Ramsey case that I know you'll be interested in. And next week, we will be back at the same time, 8 p.m. Eastern. It's Trisha's True Crime Radio, where we discuss true crime and current events. And, of course, we always do it with common sense. Good night, everyone. Take care.